is No Filter Sports. Today's date is October 22nd, 2020. I don't know how many shows we've done, but what is this, like the 200th? Is anybody keeping count?
I don't know. All I know is this much. We had a little discussion. Was it just last week among the three of us? Maybe it's just the two of us, Eli. I don't know. Let's get so-and-so. No, he's already been on the show. No, I don't think he's been on the show. No. I'm sure he's been on the show. We're starting to forget who's been on the show. We've done so many.
This is actually episode 186.
Oh, okay. Wow. Well, we're going to talk. This will be the second year that we've talked about the World Series. Last year was a real World Series. And you know what? This World Series, now that they put, 20% of people in the stands down in Arlington where they're holding the World Series, it's a little more like the real thing. Because I think they still enhance the crowd noise with some of the.
I don't agree with that. That's one of the points I wanted to make. It sounded to me, game one, right from the bat, that because they had people in the stands, Eli, that they took that crowd noise out, at least took much of it out. So it sounded just dead. I mean, totally dead. There was no buzz whatsoever. Ken Davidoff is a baseball writer for the New York Post. And in Thursday morning's editions, he writes, neither team, both of which have endured quite a grind to get to the World Series, looked even particularly high energy in game two. You know, usually the first pitch of a World Series, flash bulbs are going off everywhere. There's just a huge buzz. I didn't see it at all.
You don't see the buzz without the fans, obviously. But to imply
but they're there, they got
quiet
fans.
There, to imply that the players aren't playing with the same enthusiasm, I think is a total fantasy on your part. It would be enhanced what you thought they were, their energy level, were their fans in the stands, because that would kind of spill over. But I think they're playing pretty damn hard, if you ask me. But it's even one apiece. Rays even it by winning 6-4 last night. Let's get this out of the way right away, all right? Because it was 3-0 in the fourth inning. It was 1-0 though when the inning began, and Randy Arozarena, the leadoff hitter, it's a 2-1 count. And then the next pitch by Victor Gonzalez, a reliever, was an absolute perfect and well within the corner of the plate, a slider that hit the corner, and they called it ball three. And listen to how Joe Buck and John Smoltz dealt with it.
Oh, pretty good pitch that Gonzalez doesn't get, and the count goes to 3-1. Looked like a strike in the box, but...
Hey, yeah, me!
Hey, you hear really everything that's being shouted, and Todd Tishner's hearing it from the Dodgers dugout for calling that ball three instead of strike two. So now the count 3-1, and that is down a one-out walk.
So they're kind of chuckling to themselves because they realize that it was a strike. And then, of course, the next pitch is ball four. And, of course, with two outs, a double scored two runs. That made it 3-0. And for the rest of the game, the Dodgers actually outscored them 4-3, but it didn't matter. The game was over. So here's my question to both of you, and I don't want to get into an argument about umpiring, but everything else is reviewable. And when the Dodgers tagged a guy out, I forget who it was, at second base, they called him safe. I think it was Adames.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. He reviewed it and he touched his foot instead of the base. Yeah.
That's right. And so what happened was they reversed it, but there's no reversing a strike call.
These are too many pitches. You couldn't do that, Eli. They're just too many pitches.
No, you can't. But if they were called automatically by the same type of replay, then it would be fine. Because they maybe had to delay it a second, but then they're going to look at it. No, in fact, they're going to see it in the box as it comes in. They're going to call it right then.
And they will. You know that. We talked about this. Denny's been saying they won't. They will. It'll be
automatic. They're trying to get to that system. Eventually, that system is going to be put in place. I think it's still a couple, 2-3 years away because there's so many different things that can happen on a pitch, whether it's a slider or a curveball or what have you. And all of that's going to take some time to engineer it properly, because you can't use it right now, obviously. But the good news is that the umpires are getting a whole lot more attention that they haven't got in the past, and they could just be, and this is not good for the umpires is what try to make a joke here. And every mistake they make now is being called. And I would think that that's got to eat at you sooner or later. And sooner or later, somebody's going to do an expose on somebody throwing a ball game.
It's not going to be Joe Buck, and I'm surprised Eli mentioned that he did, because those guys have been strangely silent, so much so that I've been wondering if Buck has been told by Major League Baseball to lay off the umpires. We had a situation where G-Man Choi, our new hero, took a perfect pitch, but Buck and John Smoltz were so busy talking about the NFL and the Giants game Thursday night, they didn't make it. The umpire just kicked the pitch. It was ridiculous. So he walks a couple pitches later, and Buck actually says, boy, that was a great at-bat by G-Man Choi. What? He should have been called out. He would have been out. And they haven't been talking about this, and I think baseball's embarrassed by it.
I don't think baseball gets embarrassed by anything. Not at this point in time. I mean, we're into the season. We're into the World Series. We're playing the game. I don't think a lot of us thought that we would ever be in a World Series this year because of all the things that could go wrong. And you know what? In the grand scheme of things, Bob, they've done a real good job making the World Series be a good production again.
I think all of professional sports who got on this from March 11th when the NBA season ended, or March 12th, whatever it was, they worked so hard, every league, it's their entire business to make this as safe as possible. Working with the players' associations, they've all done an amazing job to keep their sports in public view. Back to the World Series. So I didn't ask Brandon to play Bob Marley, the Redemption song, where he says, emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds. But two cases of redemption, Kershaw the first night and last night, Brandon Lau, two guys who came into this World Series saying, what's wrong with them? Kershaw can't pitch. Look at his ERA. It's over 2 points higher in the World Series. And as Brandon Lau was it five for 55 or five for 56, some ridiculous playoff average, and he hit two homers last night.
Yeah, he was hitting 107. I got to ask a question. How the hell are you even in the lineup hitting 107? I mean, this guy didn't have as many hits as we've got fingers.
Well, he was an MVP candidate, and he's...
Well, I understand a candidate's not the guy, though, that wins the award. It isn't the candidate ever.
Well, I don't know who his backup would be, but...
Kevin Cash turned out to be right. Yep. But I got a question for Denny here about one of the things we saw in Game 1, and that's Tyler Glasnow. They were talking about the fact that he's not particularly good at holding guys on first. Yeah. I've never seen any major league pitcher this bad. He didn't seem to check the base. The Dodgers ran wild. Mookie Betts on those records that they set. Yep. And then at a time when they're pulling guys left and right for nothing, Cash left him in for 112 pitches. He walked six. Denny, when you look at fundamentals like I'm talking about, has the game changed? Are pitching fundamentals lacking as opposed to when you pitched?
I'm surprised they don't run more, because most of these kids do not hold a guy on first base very well, and including second base, by the way. I swear at times you could walk down to third base because they're just not even given a good look to second base. But on first base, you know, there's all kinds of things you can do. You can stop that guy from going further in the baseline. You can make sure he stays there. You throw a couple, two or three times over there, and sooner or later you take a little bit of the cow pee out of him, and he'll stop down and slow down and all of a sudden say, well, I'm not going to run on this pitch. I'm going to wait. And sooner or later, of course, you throw a pitch out. That's the other thing I haven't seen. Have we seen a pitch out in any of the games?
Nobody steals anymore. That's why.
That's a good point.
Right, Brandon? The stolen, except for Mookie Betts, the stolen base is gone.
Hey, I love me some stolen bases. It's tacos out of that one, too. Free tacos next Wednesday.
Oh, that's right. Free tacos.
I think rather unfairly, the Red Sox now that, you know, Mookie Betts with his that fifth inning the other night, when he stole a couple of bases. Later on, he hit a home run. He had made a great run to the plate, you know, to score the run. And they're being criticized because they basically let him go for nothing. And they offered him, but I don't think it's fair, because the Red Sox offer him $300 million for 10 years. That's a lot of money, okay?
A lot of money.
And basically, the Dodgers gave him the same amount of money. They gave him 12 for 365.
12-year contract.
Which is ridiculous. But it's the same amount of money. It's $30 million a year, fractionally higher from the Dodgers. But what's interesting, So they trade him and David Price, who opted out of the season.
Yeah.
Price could have been there in the World Series. And the reason the Red Sox did it was because they ate some of the money. The Dodgers ate half of Price's contract of $16 million a year.
Yeah, but he was supposed to make $11.9 million this year. And he opted out because he was afraid about the risk to his young family. Well, the same risk existed for other guys who decided to play. And there's been a lot of speculation that David Price now is sorry that he did this. But, you know, you got to make a choice about these things. And he did. Now, on the other end of the pitching spectrum, okay, besides leaving Tyler Glasnow in, we had a case where you mentioned Kershaw. You know, Kershaw pitched great. So he leaves after six innings. He's got an 8-1 lead. You can say the game's over. Let's save his arm. But he'd only thrown 70-something pitches. He's got all winter to rest. So they make a change. And the Rays immediately score two runs. Now it's 8-3, and I'm thinking, wouldn't that be something?
Well, there was I think it was a smart move to take him out because his ERA the last three innings, I read somewhere or heard, is very, very high. So he just pitched six innings. He'll be fresh for game five. So that worked out well for them. So that's another managerial decision that turned out to be
a good okay.
Then well, it's one of those. Yeah, it's like one of those, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't.
Right.
I mean, because you want to hold your most valuable pitcher out. You want him to pitch in his regular turn again. And, you know, who knows? I mean, God, if that thing had backfired, we'd be spitting on the umpire and everybody else, including the manager. So.
They're so worried about these pitch counts. It's ridiculous. So game two, the Dodgers used four pitchers in the first four innings. And folks, you saw what happened. Dustin May, that big red-haired kid, comes in and he immediately gives up a two-run double. And then he gave up that two-run home run to Lowe. I mean,
he pitched well, though. I thought he pitched well.
I don't think he pitched well. You given those facts right there, and you saw him. Oh my God, he went nuts on the mound when he realized what he'd done and given up that home run to Lowe. ESPN did a big feature on how Tampa Bay is changing the game of baseball forever the other day with the way they scout, the players they sign, the way Kevin Cash manages. Do you like it as well?
How are they changing it? I don't understand. Where are they changing it?
I just said four pitchers in the first four innings. Four pitchers the first four innings.
Well, we talked about that. There's become musical chairs in baseball. I don't think it's a bad thing. You know, these aren't the days where Mayo Smith put, you know, freehand K-line, the same lineup every day. They move people. Although the eight regular position players play a little bit more regularly. But this whole thing with pitching, they got so many strong arms and guys that throw 100 miles an hour. I don't think that's anything that's hurt the game at all.
No, I'll tell you this.
Either, but you know what's kind of crazy? The broadcasters get a little carried away if they're paying attention to what's going on in the field. Blake Snell the other day, he had a no-hitter going into the fifth inning. Boy, they must have mentioned that 20 times. Don't forget, he's got a no-hitter going here. We're going to enter the fifth inning here. I mean, you might
every
as well
other
start
day.
Saying it in the first inning, right? Before the guy takes the first plate, first step into the box. I mean, crazy looking for something.
Yeah, well, a couple things about that. First of all, given the penchant of these managers now to go four pitchers in four innings and pull guys, is it conceivable that Dave Roberts, or in this case Cash, should pull a guy pitching a no-hitter in the World Series because he gets a couple guys on base? I'm saying that they probably would. And in terms of whether it's changing the game or not, we saw in game two, Fox come out of a commercial break, and they showed pictures of Carlton Fisk's dramatic home run in the 1976 World Series against the Reds.
75.
Sorry about that. Thank you. 76 was a four-game sweep, I think, wasn't it, by Cincinnati? Anyway, so Buck says that game, the Carlton Fisk home run game, had, are you ready for this? 76 million viewers. Now, you think about the population of the U.S. being much smaller than, and I saw the numbers on game one. Game one of the World Series had 9 million viewers nationwide. So you tell me what that's all about. Baseball's completely falling out of disfavor.
Well, how about this now?
Whatever. Tell me what you think about that.
NBA final ratings down 49%.
Yeah, they beat it at 7 million for the NBA final.
Major League Baseball regular season down 26%. Yeah. College football down 30%. U.S. Open golf down 42%. It's not just baseball. It's the fact that it's the pandemic. Things are out of season. and there's 50 million TV choices that not even mentioning Netflix and Amazon Prime and Hulu and whatever else is out there. There are so many other choices.
But you say it's the pandemic. I don't know about you guys, but I'm sitting here down here in South Florida by my lonesome, and thank goodness that all these games are on. I don't miss one, because what the hell else am I going to do? Most of us are indoors with the pandemic.
I'm sorry you live a boring life and you're, you know, you're
Eli, you would think the ratings would be higher because of the pandemic, because there ain't nowhere to go and there's nothing to do.
Well, then I would say, how many total people are watching television? And that will answer your question. And I bet it isn't any less than it ever was. They're just making different choices.
Yes, that's what I think too.
I want to get into some other stuff here, but before we leave baseball, you know, Rob Manfred, the commissioner, had his little State of the Union thing, as they do before the World Series. And he's talking about expanded playoff field, keeping it to some degree, maybe not 16, but moving it from 10 to 14, I think is a very bad idea. You don't want to just dilute the regular. It dilutes the regular season. Isn't 10 enough? Come on. 10 out of 30.
I've always believed the more the merrier. Keep the game around. Keep it funny. Keep it merry. Keep the game in everybody's face. Let everybody play.
I hated the fact that they had four games in one day, every day, for what, a week? How do you keep up with that? You can't watch it all. It's ridiculous.
Well, it's tough. It's tough. Yeah.
And then how about this, to pick up on what you're saying, Eli? Now, there's starting to be murmurs we're hearing that, this neutral field thing isn't that bad a deal. Let's permanently make the World Series on a neutral field as they do the Super Bowl.
Well, the problem with that, obviously, is the home fans get ripped off. You're not going to get the same type of rabid, you know, now we're going back to our ballpark and will it make a difference? No, I think that's a really bad idea.
I do too.
And the other one that they may keep is this extra inning thing with the man on second. People say, you know, these games are long. This is the, you know, now you're not going to have these 15 inning games that last 6 hours in a 162 game season. So who knows?
Well, all these new things they want to try to install in the game, and not one of them shortens the game. I mean, the guy's got to pitch to three hitters. The guy can go to second base.
That shortens the game, Danny, because you know two managers coming out left, right.
Yeah, certainly the extra inning thing's going to shorten the game. And they may keep in the seven-inning doubleheaders. I don't know.
Last few games have been just shy of 4 hours. So, I mean,
yes.
Yeah. Long games.
And you know what that is, Brandon? The reason for that is I'm going nuts in front of my TV set, and I'm screaming at the screen, throw strikes, son. Throw strikes, son. And these guys are just all over the place.
Hey, I want to tell you about our very special guest coming up in a minute. But first, I want to remind you that you don't need your reading glasses to see somebody 6 feet away. Talk about social distancing. But you still can't see your phone without your readers. Your arms are just too short. And I know, because that happened to me when I got to about 45. I couldn't get that stuff farther enough away to see it. That's because you lose your close vision at that age. And that's why you should go see Dr. Yaldo. You can get multifocal implants that will enable you to see the tiniest of print and also see perfectly at a distance. It's a life-changing procedure that lasts a lifetime, too. Of course, you can still get custom LASIK. He has the most refined in the world. And these surgeries, both the multifocal lens implants and the custom LASIK, are the safest with the fewest side effects of all surgeries and all of medicine. Get a free evaluation, costs nothing. Find out which procedure will change your life in ways you can only imagine. All you got to do is call 1-800-398-EYES or go to YaldoEyeCenter.com. Tell them No Filter Sports sent you. You'll get $1,500 off the regular price. And we also talk at this time about Michigan's legacy of luxury cars that basically goes through Lincoln, America's premier luxury car. And buying a Lincoln at my place, Hoot McInerney Star, you find both the buying and service elements to be a hassle-free experience. Star is Michigan's premier Lincoln dealership. They get so many five-star reviews because they give great service, great cars, and they got a wonderful staff there that takes care of you. Drive the Star of American Auto Luxury. You can make an appointment at 248-354-4900 or buy effortlessly online at starlincoln.com. Listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. So coming up a little bit later, we have Spencer Haywood, Hall of Famer. Took him a long time to make the Hall, though, not until 2015. Yep. He's been out of the game since the early 80s. Very controversial career, but I got to tell you a story because he has a new book coming out that we're going to help him promote. I don't know what the title is. I have it here somewhere, but it's called The Spencer Haywood Rule, Battles Basketball and the Making of an American Iconoclast. It was when he jumped to the NBA from the ABA that changed the entire rule of one of the Supreme Court. But here's the story that this book is centered about. And I know I've told it to Bob and Denny, but I'm going to tell it to you out there because this is a central part of the book. 1990, Pistons are playing the Blazers in the NBA Finals, three games in Portland. Portland is the home of Nike. So during one of the off days, what Nike always did when Portland played in the playoffs, they would invite the assembled media from around the country to go to the Nike factory, the Nike store, which is huge. And they gave us all Nike employee prices. So you could buy stuff basically at half price. So I say, Spencer, you want to go over there tomorrow? Tomorrow's the day you want to, because Spencer and I are out there doing the games for Channel 2. I was on Channel 2 at the time, and Spencer was our special playoff, you know, analyst. So I'm out there with Spencer. He goes, nah, I don't think I want to go. I don't want to go to Nike factory. A little bit later, he goes, okay, I'll go for the ride. We go to the Nike factory. I buy a bunch of stuff. Everybody buys stuff. And Spencer's just kind of lurking in the background, talking to some people, doesn't buy anything. We get back in the car to go back to the hotel. And he's somber. I go, are you okay? You're not talkative today. You seem to be down. He says, well, I got a long history with Nike. I go, what do you mean? And he tells me this story that my jaw dropped. When he jumped to Seattle from the ABA and went to the Supreme Court and changed the entire rules of young players, Nike offered him, because it was a brand new company, and Phil Knight offered him a stock a percentage of the company. Spencer says 10%. Some dispute was always.
I know, and he said no.
And he said no. Instead, his agent said, take the $100,000 instead. Who knows? It's a startup company. Who knows if they're ever going to make it? We need the money. Now let's take the money. They take the money and not the stock. And of course, Nike is worth $86 billion. And when he told me that story, I go, you gotta be kidding. I wanted to puke. I was so upset for him. How do you carry that through life?
You've never told, Denny, has he ever told you this story?
I've
never
heard this story. Well, it's a true story. And well, now,
yeah, I've heard the story before, but I also had a story so similar to this. It's crazy. When I was with, I was still playing ball, obviously. And the people who owned Denny's approached me, the guy that owned them. Sure. And they wanted to know if we would be interested in them and us promoting Denny's across the country, because they were in their infancy stage to some degree. They were having Denny's pop up. They started as a West Coast company, and they were looking to go coast to coast and maybe even internationally, which they eventually did. So they offered me 5% of the holding company. Now, I'm 23, 24 years old. I don't know a holding company from a held company. So here I am trying to do wheel and deal. And I hire this guy who's supposed to be an attorney. I later find out he wasn't, but he represented everybody in baseball. His name was Frank Scott. He had more BS with him than Carter had pills. So they called me into this meeting in LA. They flew me out there in their airplane and everything else. And lo and behold, they said, we want to give you 5% stock deal if you would become our spokesman for the rest of your life. Da 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 da. And my only question was, well, how much cash do I get? Well, there won't be any cash. And he says, you're going to have to hold on to the stock for a period of time also. I says, man, that's kind of confusing. I said, let me talk to my attorney. So Frank Scott comes in a day or two, sits down with us, and he looks at me and says, nah, take the 50 grand. Forget everything else, but you just make enough appearances to cover the 50 grand. And so we got 50 grand out of the guy. And in the meantime, Denny's went through the roof. Denny is a $1 billion company today. They've been bought and bought and bought by everybody, including at one time, the guy that owned the Carolina football team also used to own Denny's also during this transitional time. When it finally happened.
This would never happen in this modern day and age. Players, impossible. Agents,
what are you talking about? It's like a guy saying buy that stock or sell that stock. You never know. I don't have any personal stories like that, but I'll tell you this. And folks, with this show, you never know where we're going to go. But I'm talking to one of our favorite guests on this program. This is years ago, Jim Brandstatter. And Brandy is telling me, he says, Bob, there's no way Chrysler's going out of business. The stock's trading like at $1.50 or something like that. He says, we're not going to lose Chrysler. So he calls up his broker and says, buy. And his broker says, no way. I will not let you lose your money. Chrysler's going out of business. Brandy says, no, it's not. Buy. And the broker won out. And Brandy didn't buy Chrysler. Never know. Well,
Yeah.
Never know.
Yeah. Well, Nike's worth $86 billion today, so Spencer's 10% would be in the billion-dollar range.
That's
so
amazing.
We'll ask him when he comes on later how often he sits in bed at night and kicks himself for that. So let's move on to where you want to go. Oh, Mitch, you're right. Of course, Bob, Big Ten football begins this weekend.
I was going to say either that or a Luke Nowacki commercial. whatever you want to do.
not quite yet, but so what does Michigan play? Let's see. Michigan plays Saturday night.
Yes, they do.
7:30.
7:30, and they're a favorite in that game. And you know, it's
come on, let's put the go blue nonsense out of the way, because the big story is the Detroit News expose Thursday morning, written by Kim Kozlowski, on the latest with the Michigan sex abuse scandal with the late Dr. Robert Anderson. It's just amazing what's going on there, Leila. We have a legal development in this, don't we, coming up on Friday, the day after we record this program.
The mediation starts Friday. There's 800 players that have, and you know.
800. Well, and John Vaughn, the former running back, whom everybody remembers, who's a Michigan fan, is primarily, he's one of the prime features here. And Don Canham emerges as the prime culprit, because Bo sent these kids to Canham. He did the right thing. He kicked it upstairs with their complaints, and Canham basically poo-pooed it. And this guy Anderson, they were thinking about getting rid of him, but instead they transferred him to another position in the athletic department, gave him a new title. This is unbelievable.
Yeah, because he was fired. He was fired. He was fired in the health service, and they resurrected him. And like I said, one of the 800 players, who's a very good friend of mine, said that he cannot understand why, with hundreds. We said this on the show, but I'll repeat it and get people forget. Out of all the hundreds of doctors in Ann Arbor who would have been so pleased to be a part of the football team, why'd they have to take a guy who was tainted like that? And of course, the one theory is that he had the juice. He had the steroids, whatever they had back then, before it really exploded. And there was some connection, some reason that's mystifying and will hopefully come out at some point as to why, with all the choices, they have to go with a guy so tainted with so many complaints as Dr. Anderson. So.
But the conundrum about this is that now they reached out in the news article, reporter Kim Kozlowski did, and she's talking to his two children. And they're both saying, not my dad. My dad was the kindest, greatest dad you ever could have in your life. Everybody That's loved good. My dad.
I'm glad one he was of the, a nice guy.
Yeah, one of the his son said, and the quote from his son is, my dad was completely heterosexual. And you know what this reminded me of? Obviously,
How
he was not.
They know?
You know what this
of course
reminded
they
me of?
Don't. This is Jerry Sandusky all over again.
Yeah, this reminds me of when some creep goes berserk, takes a gun, and murders people in a mass shooting. And everybody says, well, gee, I knew him. He was kind of quiet, but boy, I never would have expected this.
This is why people can get away with this stuff, because they're very, very good at grooming and concealing. So Dr. Anderson was brilliant at what he did, so much so that his family didn't even know, and his wife was probably the most surprised person of all, even though
just to follow up on this, no guy's going to go home after experiencing some football players in the middle of the afternoon and at dinner time as he's cutting the pork chops open for everybody, you say, oh, listen, by the way, guess who I sat down with today and looked at his hairy ass today.
Yeah. Oh, God.
That's not going to happen at dinner time.
So. I know. Yeah.
But I want to say this. I've said this before, but it bears repeating for all you folks out there. This is why it is so important that we support journalism in our free society. Subscribe to your local newspapers, because they're all in trouble. And even the New York Times, Trump refers to the failing New York Times like they haven't had their own financial problems. But wherever you're listening today, whatever community you live in, we must have a free press. Great job by the Detroit News, and great job by reporter Kim Kozlowski on this story.
Yeah, local news is dying as local newspapers die, and it's a bad thing.
Back to the sports scene.
One of the reasons the Big Ten is not eliciting the type of excitement that it should is because it's like it's over before it begins with Ohio State. They even have a new running back. They lose J.K. Dobbins. They get the Dobbins. They get this transfer kid named Sermon, Trey Sermon, a grad transfer from Oklahoma, who's a great running back. I think he was the Pac-12 freshman of the year a few years ago. They just reload. And like I said the other day, Michigan has got 0% chance of making the national championship game. And it's kind of a little pall is over the entire conference. What fun is it when you start?
I don't think so. Aren't you excited? Aren't you excited about the game Saturday?
I am. Yeah, I just my I expectations. I just have no expectations now. of them.
Well, I'll tell you what, ABC likes it because they got Herb Street and they got Chris Fowler on the Michigan-Minnesota game. That is the big national game on Monday night. Didn't you love it when the stories came out this week, quoting Jimmy Harbaugh saying he has bigger fish to fry than worry about or talk about a new contract extension, to borrow from that famous quip from Jim Mora? Extension? This guy's going into the sixth year of his program. I don't think anybody's real happy about what's going on. And Minnesota, as I said on Monday, is real good with a great young coach in PJ Fleck. If Michigan should, and they could, lose this game Saturday night,
Is this guy Joe Milton going to be the guy?
He doesn't have. And Denny, did you see this? He doesn't have Nico Collins. Kid's a great wide receiver in Ann Arbor. He signed with an agent during the COVID shutdown, thinking he might go to the NFL. Now he's stuck in no man's land, and he is not with the University of Michigan's football program.
I don't know why he didn't come back. He had a chance to come back, but I guess the horse is already out of the barn, as they say. But it's going to be Joe Milton. I wish he had played a little bit more. I wish he'd gotten a little bit of playing time.
I like him.
Man, he's a specimen of life. He's 6'5", and they say he's chiseled, and he works out all the time. He does his thing, and he's really serious about the game. And
that means nothing. That means nothing. You know what? He looks just like Cam
Newton. I know, Eli, but you know what? When you're in real good shape and you're working out all the time, you got things that work for you that don't work for people who don't work out.
I hope he's Cam Newton. I hope he's the next coming of the two.
Well, not after last Sunday. I don't hope he's Cam Newton. Well, it was enough to make Dylan McCaffrey and some of these five-star kids quake. McCaffrey transfers away. I mean, so I have high hopes for this Michigan team, although they have new cornerbacks on defense and stuff. You know, we'll see what happens. But again, Eli's totally right about this. If you're a Michigan fan, as Brandon is, you can't be too excited, because basically you know you're going to lose to Ohio State in the last game of the year.
And then Michigan's got speed now. I think they could be very, very good. They got Ronnie Bell is back, Giles Jackson. They got that freshman, Roman Wilson. So they got great speed. They're very excited, even though they lost Collins and Donovan Peoples-Jones. They got a couple of good running backs, and we'll see.
I'm looking forward to it. And
let's get rid of that third and one play all the time, or third and two play, you know, 31 trap.
No, why don't you like
Ken Beckler running all
the time. Shea Patterson would hand off on first down for two yards, and it's second and eight, and they throw an incomplete pass, and then the series is over.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of lines from the newspapers, I love this one from the Detroit Free Press earlier this week, and I quote, "Holes exist all over a Rutgers roster that resembles a sieve," end quote. Yeah. So when Michigan State hosts Rutgers in noon East Lansing on Saturday, the only thing we're going to learn about this Michigan, this guy Mel Tucker hasn't even released it too deep yet. Like, he's got a clue what's going on. It's the only thing we're going to learn about MSU in this game is if they somehow lose, which I don't think they can, because my people tell me that Rutgers has trouble on the offensive line and the defensive line, and I don't think they're going to be very good. They've lost 21 straight in the conference. And get this, fellas. I've mentioned this before. This is a great website. It's called the506.com. I have no idea why they call it that. If you go there starting at noon on Wednesday when they post all the football games coming up, they'll tell you who's doing the color commentary, what time the games are on, all the games you could imagine. So I did this last night, and we see that the Michigan State game on BTN Saturday is going to have Lisa Byington as the play-by-play person.
A woman
on the game. Matt Millen is going to be her color commentator.
Oh, my God.
Now, Lisa is a former basketball player at Northwestern. So we had a first on our show Monday. We've never had a woman on before. We had Maya Hoyon. And now we're going to hear Lisa Byington doing the play-by-play Saturday. And I continue to tell you, with what's going on in the conference right now, that Michigan State is going to be nothing more than a controlled scrimmage. The conference has decided fans are not going to be allowed at any of the universities this year, just families of players and coaches. There won't be any tailgating, they say, though how they're going to stop that. No marching bands, no cheerleaders, no mascots, no Zeke the Wonder Dog at Michigan State, empty seats filled with cardboard cutouts instead of thousands. And boys, think about this. Here's a bigger issue. The COVID thing itself. They've got an 8-game schedule with no breaks. Little flexibility for rearranging any games that wind up being canceled.
None at all. None at all, because it goes through December 12th is 8 weeks.
Yeah. You know,
The other thing that bothers me is so everything is just so up in the air and changed for this crazy time we're in. They also eliminated all the bowl eligibility requirements. Nebraska could go 0-8 anywhere, and still make a bowl game if somebody wants to invite them. But what worries me is not Lisa Byington this Saturday night. What worries me is that Minnesota's Tanner Morgan threw 30 touchdowns last year. He's an established quarterback, and the Wolverines have Joe Milton, who's played virtually none at all. Not that he can't be great. Not that he's not going to be the next Cam Newton at Auburn. But I have my doubt.
I only glanced at this yesterday, but isn't the spread like 2 or 3 points?
Michigan's actually favored by 3.
That's what I mean. It's hard to believe that they're favored.
I won't talk about
where you guys are in Metro Detroit. It's also part of this whole big deal. A whole big deal right now with COVID cases, just cases, folks, but they're spiking all over the Midwest. Yeah. Wisconsin supposedly is a disaster area. Yep. So how long until one of these teams camp? I understand from what I read that Minnesota's football team has already had some cases, and Fleck hasn't said yet what guys aren't going to play, but it looks like they might be missing some people come Saturday night. How good the people are, how key they are, I don't know.
Michigan's done a good job, but they just locked the campus down this week. Yep. Girl across the street, freshman there, came home because they can't leave their dorms, and so she came home.
Yeah.
Should I
try to get Lisa Byington on the show or Matt Millen?
Why not? Yeah. Absolutely. Why
Let's
not?
Do that.
Oh, One thing I do know, you guys.
Yeah.
I do know that Feldman Automotive is Michigan's number one Chevy dealer with 5 locations. And wasn't that smooth the way I handled that?
Oh, wonderful. You must have got 5 locations. Tell us about your professional experience, Bob.
Smooth as a deer runners into a car.
Okay, go ahead.
Anyway, Feldman's got 5 locations, Novi, New Hudson, Lansing, Livonia, and Highland. In fact, they got 9 locations total, including Feldman Hyundai of New Hudson, Feldman Kia of Novi, Feldman's Dodge, Jeep, and Ram of Woodhaven, and Feldman also has Michigan's number one pre-owned supercenter that's in Waterford, known simply as 1-800-PRE-OWNED. So you buy a fully inspected and guaranteed pre-owned auto from Feldman, then you relax with Feldman's exclusive drive it for 3 days, love it, or bring it back guarantee. And how about this? You're going to get guaranteed credit approval, too. So you can find just what you're looking for at one of Feldman's 9 locations. Their massive inventory is unmatched in Metro Detroit. And you can also just buy online at FeldmanAuto.com with an effortless, hassle-free, and safe experience. Hey, Power Home Solar is America's fastest-growing solar energy company. It's based right in Metro Detroit. Every one of Power Home Solar's state-of-the-art panels also made in America. With solar energy from Power Home, you're going to save money, help save the environment, and never again suffer a costly and infuriating power outage. Partnering with Generac, the nation's largest provider of in-home backup battery and generator systems, you'll be protected by a single, safe, sustainable solution for all your in-home energy needs. Yeah, you're going to lower your energy bills and eliminate power outages for good. And Power Home has financing, too. Starts at just $99 a month. So call them at 1-800-POWER-90, and you'll save an additional $2,000. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
Let me ask a question. In the Michigan game, are they putting 11,000 seats to the side?
No. The Big Ten says no fans
zero.
In any games.
Nobody.
Oh, nobody.
Nobody.
Right. Let me, another bit, you know, we've pointed out on the show, because we all hate political correctness. Regardless of your political party, political correctness has just become so disgusting. And we've talked about the talk show host from Chicago and ESPN who mentioned Maria Taylor's outfit and got fired for that because he said she could have hosted the video awards of the pornography industry. Big deal, a joke. Come on now. Ian Rappaport retweeted a commercial for a Manscaped, which is a razor. It does shave pubic hair, but it's a razor. Come on. We use razors for everything from our hair to our armpits.
And that's a common term now, manscaping.
And so, so listen what happened. Now, I know that the basketball coach at Penn State, Pat Chambers, is a bit of a hothead. My niece's best friend is married to Chambers and has been for a while. So Chambers
Good. Then let's get him on the show, because the story you're about to tell everybody
is so disgusting.
That I find hard to believe.
So this player, Bolton is his name, Rasir Bolton, talks to the Undefeated. And here's what he said, because Chambers mentioned a noose around his neck. But here is the context. He says, this is Bolton's words himself. He said, Chambers was on the hot seat due to a suspension and a 7-8 record at this point in the season. He said to him, I want to be a stress reliever for you. He's talking to the player. You can talk to me about anything. I need to get some of this pressure off you. I want to loosen the noose that's around your neck. That's called a metaphor. It's a figure of speech. Just like, I don't want to put a gun to your head. I don't want to put you under the guillotine.
A sword of Damocles hanging over your head. It's the same damn thing. There has to be more to it than this. Right?
A metaphor, a figure of speech in which a word or phrase is applied to an object or action which it is not literally applicable. He apologized for that. He says he did. And yet he loses his job or is asked to resign over this. It's disgusting. Who can even open their mouths anymore? There have been many times I want to say, because an old cliche is it's a black mark on his record. I don't say black mark because it may offend somebody. But depending on where you're raised, and I was raised in a very, home that
New York communist household.
Whatever. You don't have to get too specific, okay? But the point is that this is just another ridiculous, embarrassing, lunatic element of discourse in America today.
May I ask a question after
Dennis?
All of that? Has he admitted to anything? I mean, is this?
Well, he admitted. He said that.
It.
Of course. Everybody has to apologize with written stuff by PR guys.
Yeah.
And he apologized. He said, he confirmed that he used the word noose, but he said he had to apologize during the meeting and that he deeply regrets it. What more? Isn't this what Drew Brees did? Isn't there something called awareness? Drew Brees is a great guy. He was unaware of what the whole kneeling thing was about.
Right.
It was brought to his attention. He was embarrassed by it, and he asked for forgiveness and said, "I get it now." Well, this is. Aren't we allowed to even say we're
sorry? Yeah, but let's not forget the role of this. This kid must be one of the biggest jerk-offs who ever appeared in football. If Rasir Bolton, whoever he is.
This is basketball. Go ahead.
If he went to the university higher-ups and complained, alleging that Chambers was a racist, if he broke this thing wide open, then he really is an idiot. But I don't know who he is, as I said. The only thing I can say is this. When Jim Delaney ran the Big Ten, he made an unholy alliance with Penn State. Looked at Penn State and said, God, you guys are an independent. We sure want a share of that big bowl money you get every year. Penn State said to Jim Delaney of the Big Ten, God, we suck at basketball. If we could only be in such a great basketball conference like the Big Ten, this could really work out well for both of us. So that's why they did this. It hasn't worked out real well. Until the last year or two, Penn State basketball has been as bad as it's always been. Well, yeah, they'd have a good game. They might beat a Michigan or Michigan State once in a great while, once in a blue moon.
Yeah.
But Chambers, ironically, won 26 in 2017-18. So finally, it looked like Penn State basketball was on the rise. They would have made the NCAA tournament last year had there been an NCAA tournament. So maybe they were looking for an excuse. I don't know.
Because he is a hothead, and he did shove a kid, and he was suspended a game for that. We talked about that in the past.
That's part of it, too, maybe. Yeah.
Well,
that's one of those things. No matter how you punish the poor guy, it's too much.
It's
just too much. I mean, this has got to be silly.
Can I do one more? I'm sorry.
Every time somebody passes gas now, for God's sake. And, oh, by the way, I'm sorry that I did it.
Yeah. I was being serious when I said a moment ago because of your connections, Eli. Maybe we could get him on the show. But now that I'm thinking about it, my guess is that they went to him and they said, we don't like this. We kind of want you out. And Chambers says, you talk to my agent. You know how many millions of dollars it's going to cost you to get me out of here? And then there would be some kind of a, not just a non-compete clause, but a clause pretending to silence. Nobody says a word about what happened or the settlement ever again. So I don't think Pat Chambers would be talking to anybody, let alone us.
I was going to say, I could try and get him on the show. So one more college note for me. So we talked the other day or a couple of weeks ago about how Gary Danielson was getting ripped over the coals by Alabama fans.
Right.
Not Alabama fans, but other fans for liking Alabama too much. Well, then Alabama plays Georgia, and now, oh my goodness. Oh my goodness, now Gary's getting ripped for liking Georgia too much. And they and this stuff gets published on Twitter, dozens of comments. And so one guy says Gary Danielson is in a relationship with the entire Georgia football program. And then the same game, another fan writes, hey ladies, get a man who loves you as much as Gary Danielson loves Bama. This is more just insanity. And fan craziness. All right.
There's something else going on here too that I want to talk about. I think we've alluded to this before. If you look at what NASCAR did, good old boy, Waldo racing down the South, they staged a brilliant marketing maneuver a number of years ago saying we can go national if we can change this image and make sure that this doesn't appeal just to Southern rednecks. So let's do that. And they did it. The SEC did the same thing. They brought in a Yankee from Detroit, Michigan, and Gary Danielson to do their color commentator on their national games. So everybody's going to look up and say, look, they don't have some, hee-haw guy doing color commentary at SEC games. This is the best league in college football. It's for everybody. It appeals to everybody. So I think, Eli and Denny, that there's a residual backlash against Gary Danielson throughout the Deep South by a lot of these fans for being on those games to begin with.
The fact that he's a northerner and all
right.
That. I agree with you.
I mean, that's the first stick you got to knock down, that he's a northerner. And then everything else that follows is just mimicking anything to be nasty.
And Stan Van Gundy's back in business.
Yeah, Stan's back. And listen, though, what a nice gift he's got, huh? He's got Zion.
He's got Zion. He's got Ingram. He's got the youngest team in the league. So maybe he gets a mulligan for what he did in Detroit, where they also made him the general manager. And I blame that always on Tom Gores, who runs a franchise in Detroit from 2,500 miles away in L.A. Great to stay on top of your team, isn't it?
You guys already made a comment on this because you were snickering. I mean, I'm sitting there thinking when I saw the news, I mean, look, Stan's an outstanding basketball guy, but I mean, it's like the old well-worn stockpile of managers in baseball they used to keep going back to. I was curious as to why they felt that Stan was the best man for the job. He's a defensive coach. Maybe they feel they needed to shore up that way, but I thought that was curious. I don't think it's funny.
I was curious about it too. When do you start to see new guys coming in? Rather than recycled guys all the time.
Well, we've seen that.
Don't misunderstand me. But I mean, let's have some new blood.
We've got guys like Nick Nurse and people like that. So it's not as though
And how about Matt Patricia? How about new guys that have? No, we don't want new guys. We want guys that have proven they could win in a situation like that.
And now, how about this?
That's a good point.
Houston, again, as we record this on Thursday, Houston hasn't made their selection to replace Roll It Out Mike. But, Jeff Van Gundy is one of the two finalists. So we could have both Van Gundy brothers in the NBA as head coaches. And you could even refer to Jeff as being kind of shopworn, having coached the Knicks, having coached the Rockets before. Interesting.
Both very bright and entertaining. Let's talk about Ryan Fitzpatrick a little bit. This is a big story in football. Fitzpatrick, who was having a great year with the Dolphins. It's his second year there, but the last year of his contract. He's the only quarterback to play for 8 different teams and throw touchdown passes for all of them. He's been a journeyman, but he started 145 games, which is 9 a year in a 16 year. So he's somewhere between a journeyman and a starting quarterback and a backup. And he's being so supportive because he's 37 and they drafted Tua Tagovailoa, and he's been helping him and mentoring him, and he was so excited.
Supportive schmortive. He's playing his ass off, man. The guys look great this year.
Well, but he's also supported teaching Tua.
Well, he's done that too. Well. Yeah.
Yeah.
But this is amazing.
Tua gets into the game, throws a couple of passes, and then and Fitzpatrick is ecstatic because he's helping the kid, and the kid next year, because he's holding his place for him, is going to take over when maybe Fitzpatrick's career is over. He moves to another team. So what happens the next day? Brian Flores calls Fitzpatrick in and says, "We're giving the job to the kid," and he's floored. He can't believe it. Here's what he said when he was shocked by this news that now he, as the veteran, is giving way to a rookie who's only thrown 2 passes and missed most of the last season because of an injury. Here's what Fitzpatrick had to say.
It broke my heart yesterday, and it's a tough thing for me to hear and to now have to deal with, but I'm going to do my best with it. I got fired yesterday, and then my day of work today consisted of me in Zoom meetings listening to the guy that fired me, and then, you know, locked in a spaced out room, you know, with my replacement for 4 hours today. So there aren't a whole lot of jobs that are like that.
That's a tough way to go, isn't it? I mean, I've got, you know, I don't know. You guys got that same kind of history. Somebody calls you into the office, and I mean, I remember mine with Eddie Matthews called me into his little office in the ballpark in St. Petersburg, and I didn't last 60 seconds in there. Eddie says, "You're not pitching tonight. By the way, we're going to release you in about an hour."
Well, down here in South Florida, where this whole thing went down, I watched the game. They're playing the Jets last Sunday. The columnists seemed to be lined up. Someone was saying, you know, it's the right move, but it's just a tough thing to do. But Fitzpatrick's a great guy. You know, he's a Harvard graduate. Mm-hmm. He's one of the brightest guys in the NFL. He did nothing to deserve this. They were going to have to. I don't blame them at all for drafting Tua, because they're going to have to make a change eventually. But right now, at this point in time, I thought that was strange. And I just wonder. You know, I don't know if you've had this experience yourself, but the times when I was fired in the broadcasting industry, when my children were young, they would go to school the next day, and some, you know, cruel kids was, yeah, I read in the papers, oh, your dad got fired last night.
No way. Little 8-year-old.
That never happened to you?
No, they're not reading the paper. They're not doing, look.
They heard it at home. Oh, I'm not making this story up.
Maybe you got fired at Channel 7 and it was in the paper. Okay, but no,
so
my
the
kids.
The point is, Eli, why you're so pained and grimacing about this, of course, I have no idea. But if you watch that game, I know most of you did not. If you watch that game, they kept cutting away to one of the luxury booths upstairs, where Fitzpatrick's wife is sitting with their, are you ready to count them? 7 children. And they're all like between, you know, 7 and 15 and 16 and stuff like that. I'm a little concerned about what people are going to say to those kids. It's not easy for them either.
What are they going to say to your dad got fired?
I mean, what are they going to taunt them?
So
they're going to taunt them.
Oh, please.
If that's the worst thing that happens to them in their life, what a great life they'll have.
I sympathize with the situation. Ryan Fitzpatrick has made $71 million. He's Harvard educated. He's going to be just fine. It'll get picked up by another team, but just kind of took him by surprise. But, you know, I think the Dolphins did make the right move. They could make the playoffs this year, conceivably. They may be sacrificing that. But I just said a little earlier, I wish Michigan had done that with Joe Milton, because Shea Patterson never had communication with his receivers. Shea Patterson was never going to take him anyplace far, and they could have played Joe Milton, and now they go into this year. And so that's without him having any experience, and that's something that the Dolphins will have next year, because Tua will play the rest of the season.
Well, this franchise.
Let's say goodbye to the people on radio. Let's say goodbye to WCWA in Toledo. You've been listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
Well, I mean, the Miami Dolphins under University of Michigan graduate Stephen Ross, I mean, they've been a joke for a while. You know, they tried Josh Rosen. That didn't work out. They brought him in. And at my age, Brandon, help me here. I'm slipping a little bit. They drafted number one a few years ago. Oh, Ryan Tannehill. And, you know, it just didn't work out. They tied the entire wagon to him. And now, you know, he goes to Tennessee. And look at what a tremendous job he's done in leading them into what's going to be a great game Sunday afternoon, undefeated Tennessee. And the undefeated Pittsburgh Steelers. So whether the Dolphins as an organization have a clue, I'm not sure that they do about this. They've been through head coach after head coach. Also, I just don't like the way this went down. I just don't.
Okay, I have a question. Mr. Beckham Jr., what the hell happened there?
The LSU story. That's a fabulous story.
And your other boys in the news, too.
It's a great story, but they're going to line him up against a wall, and they're going to shoot this guy, I believe, before the next 2 years.
What happened was
LSU
self-imposed penalties.
Yeah.
Self-imposed penalties. It's going to they're going to – 8 scholarships over 2 years.
He can't come near the program for two years.
2 years.
I'm sure that's, the idiot goes out on the field and starts handing out cash payments to $100 LSU players after a game. Yeah. A lot less than what he made at LSU, I'm sure.
Now, that isn't why –
I don't know about that.
That's not the only reason why, which is why. So 2,000, let's see. So he gives $2,000 a total, $500 each to 4 players, and that's going to cost him 8 scholarships, reduced recruiting visits, evaluations, communication. No, the other reason is there's a guy named John Funes. He's a former CEO of a hospital foundation that is accused of providing funds to families of current and former student athletes. So it's the two things together.
I don't believe that.
So those are the two things together that is making LSU. And that doesn't mention Will Wade, who's the basketball coach, who on audio tape tapes of the whole Christian Dawkins trial is talking about giving payments to players. So
you're so negative. You're such a negative person.
It's about time we just get rid of this whole college football system and start all over again.
And Denny, I'm surprised you had your pick of your two boys to start with, and you chose to go with Odell Beckham Jr. How about AB? Looks like AB is coming
back. Listen, AB's next on my list. AB is coming. You know what?
No.
AB's going to play. AB is got
Antonio Brown. Yeah.
AB is going to play. You watch. This week, he's going to play.
Right now, somebody. The speculation is Seattle.
Yeah, Seattle is what they're saying. Yeah.
Oh, that'd be perfect.
Boy, wouldn't it, though?
Get to play with Russell Wilson. My goodness. Okay, I want to talk about want to do this day in sports in the mailbag. But first, I want to remind
you. Wait. Before we get to the specialties, you guys haven't mentioned the big one. The FL's at Atlanta.
Yeah, it's true.
A chance to improve to .500 with a victory here. And, of course, ironically, one of the big free agent signings in the offseason is cornerback Desmond Trufant. And he did not practice on Wednesday, one of four Lions starters who didn't. So he might not be able to play Sunday against his old team, the Atlanta Falcons, who finally got a victory last week. This is a lingering hamstring injury. If he does play, how good is he going to be? And that spells, for me at least, as far as the FLs are concerned, a big uh-oh.
Well, he was out. He's been out for a couple of weeks anyway, and they managed to win last week somehow. But yeah. As bad as Atlanta is starting 0-5, they do have a new interim coach in Raheem Morris, and they did play better last week, and maybe they're on a little bit of a roll. So I'd call that an even game, a toss-up game. Yeah. Not particularly compelling, though.
It's not, and neither is Thursday night's game as we record this Thursday morning.
Oh, this is terrible tonight.
It's unbelievable what's going on Thursday night in the woeful NFC East. My beloved Giants, who finally won a game 20-19 against Washington last Sunday, tonight they're taking on the Eagles, who are horrendous at 1-4-1, but the horrendous Cowboys lead the division now at 2-4. If the Giants win tonight, that means they're one half game out of first place in the NFC East after an 0-5 start.
I would rather watch two guys fish.
Well, it's the Giants. I'm going to watch the game.
Play chess.
You see my Giants shirt that I'm wearing today, Denny? Can you see that?
Yeah, you can.
It's game day.
Right behind your Jets shirt.
One other thing about the NFC East. It was reported this week that the Washington football team has apparently decided to keep the name next year. Yeah. You know, they were saying that we're going to have a nickname. How come you can't get a nickname for an NFL franchise? What I'm thinking, Eli and Denny, and Brandon, I'm thinking that maybe little Danny Snyder, the owner, is sitting on it thinking maybe this thing's going to blow over and we can be back to being the Washington Redskins.
No, he's not thinking that. That's never going to happen. No. Any nickname they come up with is going to pale compared to the Redskins.
That's right.
It's going to seem like a reach. It's stretch. People are going to say that's crappy. Remember when Ray Lane stood at the center court at the end of the Silver Dome, and he said he had the big announcement. And he said, and with thousands of you fans have written in, and the name of the new arena starting next year is going to be the Palace of Auburn Hills. And there's a silence, and then boo.
we mentioned this a little while ago. One of the Detroit papers had this big contest years ago because Billy Sims had to have a nickname. He had to have a nickname. And so everybody wrote in with a good nickname for Billy Sims, and they wanted to call him the winner was the Silver Streak. So the news goes to present this to Billy Sims, and Sims looked at me, what are you, nuts? My nickname's Simbo. It's the only nickname I've ever had. It's the only nickname I'm ever gonna accept.
Simbo?
Silver Streak and Simbo. Silver Rush defense? Give me a break. Oh, God.
What the hell does Simbo mean?
Well, it's just Billy Sims Simbo.
Like Jumbo, Jim Jumbo, whatever, Simbo. Simbo Jumbo,
I mean, you're talking Jimbo. About nicknames. You look at a name like Denny McClain, and his nickname is Dolphin. We know where it came from, playing cards.
We can stop this conversation now.
Hey, let's stop by saying that Luke Nowacki of Pinnacle Wealth Strategies can help you plan for your family obligations down the road and your own retirement. Let his track record of success and decades of experience allow Luke to create a custom solution for you or your business. Call him at 248-663 4748. Set up a complimentary consultation. And if you feel comfortable, let Luke do his thing by laying out a plan that fits your needs. Ethical, knowledgeable, caring. Luke Nowacki, Pinnacle Wealth Strategies. Call 248-663-4748. Advisory services offered through Royal Alliance Associates. And David Hall, with record rates at record lows, I should say, no better time than now to call David Hall Mortgage. He's been in our community for over three decades, consistently giving the best options, the best personal attention, and building a resume of thousands of satisfied clients. Generally, it will take less than 3 weeks to get your refi done. That's amazing. Took me less than 3 weeks, only about 2 weeks. That's why he's gathered nearly 1,500 five-star reviews from Michigan homeowners alone. Go to davidhallmortgage.com to get started or call 248-308-5000. Hall Financial, lower payments, better options, more personal attention. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Coming up in a couple of minutes will be the great Hall of Famer and Detroiter Spencer Haywood, moving up here from Mississippi when he was a kid and led the Pershing Doughboys along with Ralph Simpson to the state championship.
And Steve Smith.
Michigan, a legendary Steve game. Smith
played there too, yeah.
Steve Smith? Oh, later on. Pershing. Later on. Yeah. Sure. Pershing. Yesterday was when Carlton Fisk hit that 12th inning homer that beat the Reds 7-6 in game 6 of the World Series. Did lose the World Series in 7 the next day. Jackie Robinson signed with the Montreal Royals, a contract back in 1945 that paved the way to him starting opening day for the Dodgers in 1947. I remember this, so a little personal note. I was really into track and field in the Olympics in 1964. Abebe Bikila ran back-to-back Olympic marathons in his bare feet. Ooh. To win by more than 4 minutes in Tokyo, which would have hosted the Olympics again this year, if not for you-know-what. And it was at those 64 games that world heavyweight boxing champ Joe Frazier won easily to win the gold medal. Only way he had gotten to the Olympics, though, was because Buster Mathis, who beat him in the prelims, broke his hand. So Smokin' Joe got to go to the Olympics, won the gold medal, and shortly after that was heavyweight champion. And of course, you know about his great fights with George Foreman and Muhammad Ali. And on this day in 84, the Cubs' Rick Sutcliffe was selected as the unanimous choice of the NL Cy Young. The reason I say that is because we all wanted it to be the Cubs and the Tigers in the World Series, reliving those great clashes. I think they've met twice back in the 30s and 40s. Never happened, though. Somehow, Chicago lost that playoff to the Padres, who the Tigers, of course, whipped in 5 games. And we're glad perhaps that the World Series being played at a neutral site where it's warm, because the coldest World Series game in record happened on this day in 1997 when the Marlins in Cleveland played in 38 degrees. Ooh. So maybe they should do the World Series in a bubble down the road. No, not really, but I just...
That's the only positive to have in the World Series and these playoff games out in San Diego. It is so nice not to see people suffering in the stands, those who have been there.
All right, time for our favorite feature, the mailbag.
You wouldn't like the neutral field?
I like to see paying customers comfortable, you know, I really do. I was very happy when they...
Get a neutral ballpark and let's play.
Here we go, Denny. Ready for the mailbag? You can tweet us. You can tweet Denny. Denny says he's writing his own tweets. He's responding at MU2Denny. Eli is not. I'm at Bob Page Sports. And we have a lot of comments, first off, about our Monday show with Manon Rayom. Jeff Schrote says, I enjoyed your interview with Manon. I'm glad multilingual Bob was there in case we needed to translate phrases like, quote, a little more butchy, and quote, on her period. Great show as usual. Jeff, my French is good, but it ain't that good, buddy. I can't follow everything Eli says with a French translation. David Four says, Eli really was pushing buttons on that episode, going all Howard Stern with his butch comments and keep bringing Manon's looks into question. This was a great podcast with all the crap going on.
Okay, can I just say something here before you go on? When she dialed into Zoom, now I saw her when she was in her 20s and she was good looking back then. Man, she is better looking now.
She's 48. I think she looks amazing.
I think we looked at her and go, "Oh my God, we've got a Playboy model."
All did.
On
listen,
our
guys, listen. Course. We all did. I saw when she popped into Zoom.
Oh,
I was
God.
Looking at the screen and I saw Bob, I saw Denny, and I saw Eli, and I saw Wow.
Yeah.
And she did. She just appeared on our Zoom and she looked amazing. So that's why we were kind of caught off guard.
She looks better at 48 than she did at 20 to me. She's amazing.
What happened to me, I think you regular listeners know about my various technical issues from time to time. So my printer was broken Monday. So I'm off the feed. I can't see the guys. I'm just reading the mailbag right off my computer screen in front of me. And all of a sudden, Denny says,
"You hear the heavy breathing?
Look at that girl," or whatever it is. Look at that girl. What girl? Like, oh, yeah. My Ori Holmes coming on. So I quickly switch back so I can see. And there she was. And Ron Grubbs says, "You know, I always enjoy your show, but this time really enjoyed it with Manon Rayon. But have we gotten so PC that Denny can't say Manon is, quote, a beautiful woman? It didn't sound sexist or creepy to me. Sounded very complimentary. I'd say she's the best looking goalie ever in pro hockey." I would say so, too.
I would say so, too.
But listen to this from Detroiter Paul Caron, who was a CNN reporter and producer in Atlanta for a number of years. Now he's a TV news director in Huntsville, Alabama. He says, "Awesome show and great to hear Manon Rayon's story. In the ice hockey beer leagues I played in Atlanta and in Huntsville, I had many women teammates, including goalies. It's no big deal. Women are always great teammates." Mm. Denny, how about Iffy the Dopester? He's been very busy as always. If you're a Tigers fan, folks, I just want to tell you this, and you're on Twitter, you really should follow him. He's got amazing old picks. He keeps finding of Denny and so many other Tigers.
Well, he really does.
He just does a great job. So he tweeted us this week. He says, "Thanks for bringing me and all of the NFS, that's our show, Denny, NFS, all the NFS faithful, our baseball card heroes, namely Ron LaFleur, Steve Kemp, Jason Thompson, Lou and Tram, Wilcox, Darrell Evans, Tom Brookins, John Hiller, and also Pete Rose." You know, Iffy, that's just the way the show's evolved since we've had it. Because among the three of us, we just really don't know any of the current players, but we know among us almost all the older guys in our listening audience skews a little older. So we're glad that all you folks like to hear from those people.
Now we have our guest is dialing in. Do you have any more mailbag things? Or can
I certainly
we...
do as a compliment for you. I know you.
Okay, I want to say before I forget, the one thing I didn't say to Manon that I should have done, but it would have been even more politically incorrect than calling her beautiful in the butchy comment, was I should have said, you know, Denny's in his mid-70s and he's lonely. Is there a chance that your mom is available?
So anyway, C. Michael Raymond, the regular listener, compliments Mr. Z. He says, "Just catching up and listening to this show, where did Eli find the George Kell clip calling Mark Friedrich's game? As a Kell K-line fan, trust me, clips from this era are just not out there. May not be a big thing, but it seems like Eli finds this kind of stuff all the time. They're huge, and one reason why we keep coming back to listen to this show."
Well, I saved a lot of stuff, and then when I did the show with Gibby and Gary, I collected tons of stuff that I kept in a storeroom at Kirk's office, and then he had to sell the office or move. I had to get rid of all of it, but I do have some stuff left over from the old days that I still have. So
website submissions for us, folks, you write us asknofilter@gmail.com. Thank you, Bob Page, for mentioning that Joe Davis was the broadcaster for game 7 between the Dodgers and the Braves. I'm a family friend of the Davis family. I've known Joe since the day he was born, taken over for Vin Scully, as we said on the Dodger broadcast. But Joe would tell you that no one takes over for Vin Scully. Bob also had it right about Joe being from Potterville. Like many broadcasters, he does multiple sports. His dad, Paul Davis, is a Michigan High School Hall of Fame football coach, and Joe's a spotter for his college football broadcast. The only name I have connected with this, by the way, is Joe Davis. So maybe it is a cousin or something like that. I don't know. 760-89-BALLS is the number to call to leave a message or text us. We haven't heard it from Grosse Pointe Charles for a while. He says, "Love the show, but all Denny talks about is money and betting. Bad look given his past. Nauseating." Yes,
Eli, that's not all he talks about.
Spencer Haywood is here.
Spencer's here.
Look at that yellow shirt he's wearing today.
Well, listen,
hey, man, how are you?
Hey, how y'all doing?
All right.
You're interrupting us, Sam, and I'm in the middle of the mailbag.
The mailbag's over. Thank you for interrupting us, Spencer. Thank you very much. Okay, let's move on with that.
All right.
Spencer Haywood, born a sharecropper's son in Mississippi, at 17 after moving to Detroit, led Pershing High to the state title. At 19 in 1968, led Team USA to Olympic gold, enrolled at the University of Detroit. It became an instant All-American, and after a year in the ABA, changed the face of sports by taking the NBA all the way to the Supreme Court, which struck down the league's bylaw requiring players to wait till their class graduated. creating the so-called hardship rule. Predictably, Haywood went on to become an immediate NBA All-Star.
On the front line from the Seattle Supersonics, his first trip to the All-Star game, number two, Spencer Haywood. Oscar to the corner to Bob Love of the Bulls. He's looking for Haywood, gets it to him. Haywood against Dave DeBuscher. Beautiful shot.
Haywood rebounded.
Oh, my goodness, he was 6 feet over the rim to get that one. Wow, you see Spencer Haywood go to the basket. That's called determination.
Determination, 6 feet over the rim. I don't know about 6 feet over the rim. Spencer, you're only 6 foot eight. I don't think he got 15 feet in the air, but hey, man, it's good to see you again. How are you? And tell us about the new book.
Good to see you, Bob. And I think, who is that in the dark shadow back
there?
That's
Denny McClain.
Denny McClain. I know it is. I just wanted him to say so.
Well, you both had a pretty good year in 1968, as I recall. You won the Olympic gold, and Denny around that time in October was winning the Cy Young Award. So,
In fact, that's why I came back to the University of Detroit because of Denny.
Oh, please.
Is that right?
What? No. He's so full of it. He's full of it.
Oh. No, let me tell you the story.
Okay.
What happened was Mayor Kavanaugh and Governor Romney asked me to come back because we were in the process of trying to build something, some dynasty back in Detroit after the riots. And I wanted to go to New Mexico, University of New Mexico. And then I also played with the idea with John Wooden that I would go to UCLA. And they lured me back home to Detroit because there was a movement going on in sports back in Detroit in 68. And so I was right in the middle of it. And Denny McClain, Willie Horton. Hey, Willie Horton's birthday was just 2 days ago.
1968, you're 19 years old. And Will Robinson, who was your coach at Pershing, and now you're at the Olympics in Mexico City, and there was the boycott. Tommy Smith, John Carlos eventually raised their fist. It's an historic moment, lives in history. Jabbar Kareem at the time was the only black athlete that bowed out. And you were there, and Will Robinson, who was your mentor, what did he advise you? Because they obviously tried to get you to go along with it, and you said no, right? I'm just here to play ball.
No, I'm just here to play basketball. And I can flash back to 3 years earlier. I was in Mississippi. I didn't have a passport. I had no name. I was just called Boy. So, that was let's go play. But what happened was you had Jesse Owens. You had Wilma Rudolph, all of the great athletes before us in the Olympics, and they were talking with us about the idea of boycotting. And because the boycott did move down to the games itself, and Kareem boycotted, but we also had Elvin Hayes and Wesley Unseld who signed their professional contract, and because you had to be an amateur in order to play in the Olympics. And so we had this big meeting, and Jesse Owens was like, you know, if you guys mess around here and mess this up and start boycotting, you won't ever get a job. So John Carlos jumps up, we ain't going to get one anyway. And so we were like talking. So Denny, you know, athletes in a meeting like that, you're talking trash, you know. Yeah, man, what's this old Uncle Tom talking about? Blah, blah, blah. So Jesse said, hold it. How would any of you SOBs felt if you had to run before Hitler? And we were like, oh, well, George Foreman, well, I'm getting my shoes. I got to go work out. And John Tommy said, let me lace them up. Let's go. We got to get out of here. It's beautiful. So,
George Foreman,
my meeting for social justice in Mexico City.
Well, let me say this, Spencer. In 1968, I was living in my hometown of Grosse Pointe, Michigan, and it's just my parents lived. I wouldn't have chosen to live there. You couldn't have bought a house there. And so when Tommy Smith and John Carlos did what they did, I'm going, and my generation, my Woodstock generation, is going, right on, man. You're not free in our own country. Were you shocked at the outcry and the outrage from so many of the older generation against what they did?
Yeah, it happened right in front of us, you know, so because we had to participate in all of the track and field events because we were the fans for the USA Olympic team in 68. Yeah. And so when they went up on stage and put the glove on, I mean, immediately Avery Brundage, who was a Nazi, for real.
A fascist.
Yeah, he was,
right.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, he kicked them out of the Olympic Village and they had to march through all of us and throwing things on them and so on and so forth. And then they get back home, they were treated like garbage again. And they won gold and silver. It's like, it was so unbelievable. And then of course, you know, we had, our games were coming up and Howard Cosell got me in the corner because, you know, I was 19 years old. I had just turned. And so Howard says, listen, if you lose this final to Yugoslavia, the world will never forgive you. And I was like, oh, Howard, will they forgive me in Detroit?
Jeez.
So I kind of like got it together and we played and won the championship. So Will and I are coming back from Mexico City to Detroit and we were like, man, the brothers are going to hang me when I get home. And so we landed in Metro and all of the people came out to salute me for the gold medal win. So I was like, oh my God, I'm in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, you didn't know in Mexico that it was a heroic effort. I mean, you were you and Foreman, who waved the little, Foreman's a huge guy who had this little tiny American flag that he waved in the ring. But those are, it was such a tumultuous time. Then, of course, you jump after one year at UAD to the ABA, which you were allowed to do. You become the MVP in the ABA when you're 20 years old. And then, and this is what has made you, as you say in the title of your book, The Making of an American Iconoclast, you took the NBA to the Supreme Court and changed the whole face of professional basketball. You're only a kid, so you must have had some lawyers pulling you along, but you were the face of it, and you created the hardship rule and opened up the door for tons of athletes to make serious dough, which they were denied before. How did that all happen? How did that come to be?
Was that
how
a question?
Is Denver, the Denver Rockets in the ABA gave me a contract for $1.9 million, allegedly. And the way this money was supposed to be distributed to myself under the contract was that they were going to put $10,000 in a dog off plan on Wall Street, and this $10,000 will arrive at 1.5, and I would get paid. Danny, this is one of those contracts. I would get paid from age 50 to age 70. And then, hold on, one more caveat. I would have to be in employmentship of Ringsby Truck Line. That contract was voided. And then I went to Seattle and Sam Schulman and the NBA was like, well, no, you can't play because you have one more year before you just need to set out for one more year and then go into the draft. I was like, I played already. Why would I want to go into the draft if I've played already a season? So Sam Schulman said, son, I'm going to teach you about Jewish loyalty. And so he put up $1.5 million for us to fight this case. The first round was, ladies and gentlemen, we have an illegal player on the floor, number 24, and he must be escorted out of this arena. And they would put me out in the snow and stuff. And then the following 10 game injunction, I had an injunction. And so you had great players like Chet Walker who would say, hey, you know what? I sprained my ankle. He was playing with the Chicago Bulls. I sprained my ankle, so Spencer Haywood owed me $600,000. I'm like, where am I getting all of this money from? So it went on and on like that, back and forth. And then we got to Cincinnati, and that's when they had the big, because the case was nearly at the Supreme Court. And at that time, we were playing against Oscar Robertson, Jerry Lucas. No, it was Jack Twyman,
Jerry Lucas,
Wayne Embry, Tom, John Tresvant, all of those guys. And they got an injunction that read, he's got to go off the grounds in which the arena sat on. So they put me way out into the snow banks. And then we moved on into to the Supreme Court to hear the case. And they said, you know, Spencer, you legally can play under the Sherman Antitrust Act. And here we go. And but yet the union, the old heads in basketball were saying, no, we can't have this guy coming in young because Julius Erving and all these other guys are going to come and they're going to push us out. So I didn't have any support from the union. But finally, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar gave me a big hug at center court. And we was talking, yeah, let's play some ball. Let's get it on. And that's how this whole thing started. And since then, I look at the salaries and what I've created with players. I've made over $23 billion in salary.
Oh, my God.
And I haven't gotten a dime, Denny.
Not a dime. How about, did they send you a ring?
Yeah, I got
no ring either, right?
You got
well, did, has LeBron or anybody ever come to you and said, man, we know what you did for us, and we owe you a debt of gratitude we can never repay as modern players?
Well, LeBron has, and Kevin Durant, and some of the other players, but by and large, this book, The Spencer Haywood Rule, is waking them up. And what The Spencer Haywood Rule is all about, the book and the ruling, is that you have, in the NBA, you have the Oscar Robertson Rule, you have the Larry Bird Rule, but you don't have the Spencer Haywood Rule. And the Spencer Haywood Rule has been covered up under one and done, the hardship, and all of these other fictitious names. And finally, Adam Silver and Michelle Robertson, Chris Paul, and all of the executive board for the Players Association, they are trying to get the name changed. So I have my name on my room.
Yes, right. Hey,
listen, let me ask.
Poor boy from Silver City, Mississippi. And it ain't no city.
let me ask you this. With this big movement that's going on, all Black Lives Matter, are you involved at any level with those folks?
Yes, I am. I'm enjoying the journey. And yesterday, Tommy Smith, John Carlos, and I were doing a Zoom together. We were just talking about all of this stuff. And Charlie Scott jumped on and said, hey, I was in the 60s, because this is our 50th anniversary.
Wow.
We didn't get a chance to celebrate it this year because they had to shut down the Olympics. So we were all just talking, and we were just talking about all of this movement. It looks like the same period that we were in 68. So it's just the way it is, yeah.
So I told the story earlier about when you and I were at the 1990 finals in Portland, and because I know it's a big topic of your book is the whole Nike contract, and we're coming back that day, and you're kind of disconsolate in the back seat of the car, and I go, Spencer, you don't seem to be your same jovial self today. And you said, well, when I go to Nike and think about that, this memory comes back. And when you told me, as I said on the show earlier, my jaw just dropped. And now you've written about it extensively in the book that you wrote with Mark Spears. How often do you sit up at night, especially those years where your cocaine addiction and various things had cost you your income, and thought about how life would be different? Have you been able to block it out, or do you still think about it from time to time?
Yeah, I think about it, but, you know, it's my journey. It is my journey, and I pay dearly for it in the sense that, you know, with the Nike deal, let me just explain that deal.
Yeah, please.
Because what happened is we had no representation with Nike at the time. Nike came to me in 73, 72, actually, and said, look, we need a spokesperson for the shoe and the brand. And I said, hey, I'm your guy. And my agent signed the agreement. I went on the road because back then you would go on the road. You would be on the road for, you know, you'd be on the road for like a month, seemed like, you know. So he had my power of attorney, and he couldn't figure out how to get his 10%.
No, boy.
And he traded in my stock for the cash.
Oh.
So that's how I lost $1 billion.
Oh, my God.
It was you know just what they say, Spencer? Stuff. It's only money.
It's only money.
Hey, in 1992, you wrote your autobiography, and you were kind enough to mention me in it and my show on WJZZ.
Oh,
it was called Spencer Haywood, The Rise, The Fall, The Recovery. And I love the book, Especially about your childhood in Mississippi. But what's different? What's different about between that book and the one you're just out with now?
This one is just up to date. We're bringing it up to date because back then in 92, the Players Association, all of those players, they didn't get a chance to read that book or to know anything about me and what I had, the stance that I have taken. And David Stern, before he passed, he said, look, Spence, we need to get this story out here. It's been too long. It's been 50 years. So let's do something about it. So he hooked me up with this, with Triumph Books. And he was writing the foreword for it before he passed. And so that's how this whole book story came about. And it's just, I guess it's, you know, because when you sue the NBA, there's going to be some, you know, some kind of feelings and some disagreements. And plus, it's the ruling itself is Hayward versus the NBA. That's a Supreme Court ruling. So, you know, there's a little bit of angst about it at the time. And so all of those years passed and the time is right now. And so these players are, they have purchased 500 books. They distribute them to each other and they making sure that they know the story. And man, I just
that's cool. That's cool. Everything.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, I know everything to Detroit. I mean, Detroit gave me my life because, you know, poor boy coming in from Mississippi. I mean, they playing like three string guitar, singing them blues, you know. So I get to Detroit, all of a sudden they are like, "Woo, baby, I'm losing you." The Temptations and all this stuff. People coming to the games. I'm like, "Oh, you know, Stevie Wonder." So.
Well, you're not knocking the blues, Muddy Waters and Clarksdale, Mississippi.
Man, Robert Johnson, come on,
man. Come on, man.
Clarksdale, you're right, Clarksdale.
So you're ABA All-NBA first team in 72 and 73. You're an incredible national figure in basketball. They trade you to the Knicks. You're with New York for 4 years. You marry Imam, the internationally renowned model. I suppose that's the days of Studio 54. You're doing a show on radio. You are still the star of stars, and you're only in your mid-20s. Obviously, after that, and this is a big problem in the NBA, cocaine slipped in and it hurt a lot of people. You're not the only one. You must regret that too, what happened to your career, because it kind of derailed you and changed the course of your life from there on in.
Yeah, it did. I got to LA and everybody out in LA, I mean, I didn't do coke. I just sparingly did some lines here and there in New York. But when I got to LA, ooh. I mean, everybody was at the big parties. Everybody was smoking coke. You know, they were smoking it like in a freebase form, but they call it organically. You know, LA
organically.
Yeah. With the air quotes here,
they did it. You're washing all
safe and healthy. It's a safe and healthy way to do it.
Let me explain it to you.
Yeah, that's when they shoot you in your armpit.
And the ball rises to the top and falls to the bottom, and you put it on a pipe and you smoke it. I mean, my first night, I did not understand what had happened to me. The first night that I did this coke, I stayed there all night, and I was like, "Whoa, what?" What happened to me? So it grabbed me on the first night. And then I just kept going back. And during that season, I came in there averaging 24 and 12. By midseason, I was down to 16 and 7. Ooh. And by the end of the season, I was down to 5,
ooh,
7.
Wow. And then, so, Spencer, the length,
I was
the
like 15 pounds lighter. I was arguing with people. Like Magic would drop a pass. Let me give you an example. Magic would hit me with a pass. And it would be right in my hand because I lost my hands in the process. And it hit me right in my hands. And then we go into film session. And I was like, Magic, you know, you're putting the ball down low. You're putting it on my knees. What's wrong with you? Because, you know, the denial factor.
Right.
It wasn't me.
Right,
my hands was great. I'm killing y'all. So the Magic was like, look, let's go back to film up. It hit him. It hit you right in your hand. I was like, well, it wasn't chest high.
Later on, with the tragic death of Len Bias, you must have thought to yourself, that could have been me. I could have died.
Could have easily been me. You know what I'm saying? I mean, by the grace of God, I was saved. And so I went and did treatment. I did a journey around the country, making 12-step meetings, trying to understand what was going on in my life and how it happened. Then I went, my former wife, Iman, says, well, you know, why don't you go on a trip throughout Egypt and throughout Africa and learn the history. So I did such, and I went all around throughout Africa, and I learned that, wait a minute, this is something different. So in my meetings with my psychologist and my psychiatrist, because I'm doing both, so it was like, did anybody in your family ever drink a drug? I was like, yeah, I've lost two sisters and two brothers from drinking. But that's not me, you know. So it was a disease that's in my family.
Mm-hmm. Addiction.
And I didn't recognize. So now I just go out and tell my four daughters, whatever you do, don't get down. And of course, they don't listen, but.
Of course they don't. You were clean when you came in 85. You're now 35. Mm-hmm. And the Piston, Chuck Daly invites you to camp.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, this is great, man. Spencer, God, what a great final hurrah this would be. You have a really good training camp, and then they suddenly drop you. I know you were deeply, deeply hurt by that. And what was behind that?
Deeply hurt, because Will Robinson was there with me, Jack McCloskey, who has been out in Portland with me and so on, and out in the Seattle area. That really gave me a head spin. So I was coming back from Windsor, from where we had our practice. And I stopped on the bridge and I looked down. And I was like, I want to get the hell out of here. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be living like this. Mm-hmm. And people keep crushing me down, even though my sobriety, everything I've done. And I can't go back on the other side of the river in Detroit, because everybody's going to be on that bridge again, waiting for me. You failed. You ain't, you know. So I got back in my car and made it home. And I realized too that, you know, these things happen. And
you didn't think about jumping. You're not saying you thought about jumping off the bridge, are you?
Yeah, I did. I was on the Windsor Bridge.
Wow.
Listen, you know, this, the end of a career is tough. I mean, how about Denny when he's 28 years old, 4 years removed from being the number one player in the world, and suddenly he's given his walking papers, doesn't have enough money because nobody got paid back then. His career's over at 28. You know, that could easily make somebody say, What am I going to do? What's the point? What?
Make you say, I'm out of here.
Yeah, I'm out of here. Right.
Let me tell them about this night. You and I were broadcasting the Pistons game against LA.
Uh-oh.
So, okay, Bob. So here's the deal. We're broadcasting the game for Channel 2. And I come on with Eli and I said, oh, the Pistons are going to sweep them. They are no good. Eli's like, oh, no, he didn't.
You were right.
And guess what? They swept them.
Oh, we had a good time. We had a good time, except for that moment in Portland a few years later when you had to go to the Nike factory. But God, it's good talking to you again, man.
Yeah. Hey, what are you doing? What are you doing now, man? Where are you living?
I live in Las Vegas. I play a lot of golf. I enjoy my wife was here with me, and all of my daughters have graduated and moved on. I have two doctors that I have raised. I have a psychologist and a professor at Lincoln University. And Zuleika, she runs Iman Inc. And Isis, my youngest, she was at Bleacher Report and at Slam Magazine. So she's doing another gig on her own and with her own stuff. So I'm very happy. I got two grandsons and one granddaughter. So life is pretty good. I play golf. I got hit the other day. I'm like this cart. I'm sitting in my cart, and this guy's coming up on me. I'm like, is he going to hit his brakes? And he starts skidding, and he hit my cart. So I got a whip.
Yeah,
play golf today. But Bob, you know, we go back a little bit because, you know, I'm a jazz man.
So, I know that.
Yeah.
And Eli was on JZZ too. Hey, who hits it farther? You or Lanier? And who hits it straighter?
Well, Lanier can't play anymore, I don't think.
Lanier's he can't play right now.
Yeah. Well, he hit it a ton. I bet you do too, don't you?
You mentioned Bob on JZZ before me. I am real. Well, you were still in New York when I was
there.
Well,
you know, what happened was when I came up from down south,
I know.
Will Robinson said, hey, listen, I want you to listen to this guy, Ed Love. His diction is perfect. He's a great jazz DJ at WJ. And you listen to him, you'll learn how to speak. And because I was like, yeah, okay. So so I started listening to him, and that's how I ended up being a jazz nut. you know.
Ed Love, he sold shoes at Sibley's during the day.
Oh, look out!
That velvety smooth voice. God.
And you know, Spencer, that's how I became, you know, such a jazz freak, because my buddy Eli Zarrett, we were kids, was on that station. And I'm a white rock and roller, man, but I turn it a little early to try to hear Eli, and they're playing something that's pretty good. Then I forget to turn Eli off when he's done talking. They play another record, and I thought, hey,
I like
pretty
this.
Good.
Stuff. Pretty good. So I started in 1976 there, and I go to the Lions the first day. I've been on the air a couple of months, and I timidly go up to Lem Barney. Go, hey, excuse me, Mr. Barney, do you have a minute or two? He looks at me. He says, "Who are you?" I go, "I'm Eli Zarrett from WJZZ." He stares at me. He goes, "Whoa! I warned you were a brother."
I got that too. I was black.
Oh, I thought you both were brothers.
No, yeah, I know. I got that one time. I introduced myself to Alan Mitchell, a Michigan wide receiver over there in Ann Arbor one time. He looks at me and says, "Man, I listen to you every day. I thought you were just this really articulate black guy."
Oh,
I said, "No,
comment.
Do you like the NBA of today, Spencer? Everybody says it's nothing but a 3-point shooting contest."
No, I love the NBA today. I really do. And now those guys this year in the bubble, away from their families.
Yeah.
With
big time.
I mean, they put it on the line.
Amazing.
Put their lives on the line. They put it on. So, and everybody asks me, well, you know, well, is this, should they have an asterisk by it? I'm like, they should have a trophy. I'd get two trophies for what they did, you know? Yeah. And then I raised a little bit of hell when I said, you know, if you're looking for the GOAT, you better start looking at LeBron James.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's
sure.
So, Spencer.
That's real deal. Danny, you know Ball from Ballers.
Absolutely. I mean, he carried the league on his back, boy. He did everything he was supposed to do and more.
I agree. Now, Spencer,
I'm surprised you say that in a sense, because if I got one guy in his prime to start a franchise with, I'm picking the greatest all-around player of all time, Spencer, and that's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, your ex-teammate.
Comparing a pitcher, different era.
You can't see the NBA could not market. They can't market.
Sure.
A 7-foot guy with a perfect hook. I mean, come on. You got to have somebody out on the floor moving and kicking the floor and stuff. You can't have like Kareem. Kareem won in high school. Kareem won 3 in college. I mean, he won 6. He's the best, but we can't say that.
Yeah.
Well, at least you admit he's the best. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. So Spencer, I saw you a couple of years ago at the airport because they had the NBA Hall of Fame induction, and we ran into each other. And you weren't inducted until 2015, and your career had ended 30 years earlier. Why did it take so long? Was just lingering prejudice because of the whole drug thing? Why would they make a player with your credentials wait that long?
Thing, it was about the case. Everything go back to the case. You don't want to like have an example of a person fighting the corporate, you know?
Yeah.
And so you can't do that. And you have to go through some punishment there. You're going to go through a little bit of setbacks. But I look at it like I waited for 27 years. But hell, I wasn't in a South African jail like Nelson Mandela. So life is good.
Yeah. Well, good talking to you again. Great seeing you. You look great. And good luck with the book, The Spencer Haywood Rule, Battles, Basketball, and the Making of an American Iconoclast. Ironically enough, it's Triumph Books, where Danny and I wrote our book about 10, 12 years ago. So good luck with it.
Yeah. And by the way, Spence, when you make a trip to Detroit, give us a call. I'll borrow some money from Eli and I'll take you to dinner.
Okay, let's do that.
For sure, though. Let's do it.
All right. Good talk.
Spencer, thanks so much, man. It's always great to see you.
Take care and good luck with the book.
Good to see you.
All right. So long. Great story. You know, this is again, redemption in sports. Talked about it at the beginning of the show. I mean, the ups and downs in this guy's life. And I remember that last one. I didn't know that he thought about jumping off the Windsor Bridge, but that was a really tough time for him. He fought so hard to get back. And then he looks like he's going to make the Pistons. And something happened on the inside involving some player resentment against him. I don't want to get into it and name names. But and then he had the class not to bring it up. But Chuck wanted him on the team, thought he could play a role. This was in 85 when they were still building. And he was kind of snaked. But that's unfortunate. Anyway, great seeing him again. Good talking to him. And good show today, guys. I really had a good time.
Yeah, good. I'm glad. See, it's fun, Eli. This is a fun show to do. We want you and we need you.
Well, that's so nice to be wanted. Anyway, we'll see you all Thursday. We'll see you again on Monday.